Can you talk a little bit more? I know more data was presented from this trial that she was in at ASCO, and there's some other stuff presented on melflufen at ASCO. But you can kind of summarize the clinical research that's been done on this drug.
Well, yes, melflufen is a targeted cytotoxic neal, which is in its, you know, if you want to say it's in the alkylator family, it is, but it's really downstream in terms of its differentiation. If you put sort of melphalan at the very top end of it, it's kind of a great granddaughter, if you will. It's derived from the Karolinska Institute from some very important work where essentially they have used peptide conjugation as a technology to sort of build this platform where the active moiety is turned on by aminopeptidases. And aminopeptidases are enzyme systems that are highly expressed in tumor cells and exquisitely highly expressed in myeloma cells. So essentially it's a targeted form of cytotoxic. So what happens is it permeates through the hematopoietic cells of the bone marrow, it excreted, as it were, moves in and out of normal tissue. But in tumor cells, because of the presence of aminopeptidases, the targeted delivery of the active moiety is achieved. It then stays in the myeloma cell. It is not excreted from it, and it does its damage to the myeloma DNA and so forth. So, and biologically, its effects are not simply limited to intercalation of DNA. It does much more than that. There are anti-angiogenic properties seen. There are a variety of other effects. And when we've looked at it preclinically, it works in melphalan-resistant cells preclinically, and its in vivo modeling is also striking, where it works in melphalan-resistant myeloma in rodent models. And then in clinical trials to date, we've seen it work when alkylation has failed in early phase studies, and now there are a number of trials ongoing. Horizon is one. The ANCHOR study is particularly compelling. This is a study in which we're combining it with bortezomib, combining it with daratumumab, and preclinical work by my colleague Dr. Dharminder Chauhan has suggested this could be highly synergistic, and it appears to be so. In the ANCHOR data presented at EHA, my colleagues presented a response rate in the bortezomib group of 100%, which is in relapsed refractory disease, and they presented a response rate with daratumumab of 82%. Now, the numbers remain relatively small, so we have to be careful, but I would suggest to you that's quite an interesting signal, Neil, at this stage.
Globally, what is the response rates to monotherapy in relapsed disease?
That's a great question. I think it's fair to say that response rates to single agents, when you're dealing with an active drug, I think that response rates to monotherapy combined with low-dose dex usually, because that, and people say, oh, it's the dex effect. Respectfully, that's not true. We know that from phase three studies, that there was a study called the ADMIR trial, which looked at weekly dexamethasone at 40 milligrams as a control arm, and the response rate was a stunning 2%. So the argument that low-dose dex confers response in relapsed refractory patients is not held up in phase three settings anyway. Suffice to say that the monotherapy signal from most active drugs in the setting, in my experience, is around 30%. And I think that when you look at clinical benefit rates, which reflect minimal response, which in my opinion is an active signal in early phase studies, typically it'll be about 40%. Or better. And then, of course, stable disease, which we call disease control rate or DCR, usually that's the order of 50 or 60% for active agents in this setting. The real benefit of these drugs is always much earlier, in my experience, and in combination. So with melflufen, we're seeing that sort of signal, and we think that's encouraging, particularly as, in a sense, it's a novel mechanism of action. And of course, there's been the recent data from the STORM study led by Dr. Sundar Jagannath and Achachari, in which they've shown with selinexor, which is the inhibitor of nuclear export proteins, it's a unique mechanism of action, a similar signal. So I think we know, even in the setting of triple class refractory disease, that you can see this kind of signal in active agents. In my own opinion, melflufen is promising, very importantly, because of this distinct mechanism, especially when your sort of immunotherapeutic and proteasome inhibitor-based strategies have failed. This cytotoxicity that sort of hits this stemness may be very important.
So, you know, it's pretty interesting being a general medical oncologist nowadays. And selinexor that you just referred to just got approved, which, you know, I think most people, including me, don't know much about either one of those. But before we get to selinexor, let's go back to melflufen, because what you're saying is kind of surprising. You know, I've been asking people about it. Nobody seems to know much about it, but I don't know, maybe they shouldn't have chosen the name, because I thought, whoa, this is like oral melphalan or some variation of chemo. It doesn't sound anything like that.
No, in fairness, you know, because it has this active moiety that it delivers to the tumor that is indeed at core an alkylator moiety, it's much more targeted, though, and much more selective. And I think that's its huge advantage. I think what's also very important is because it's able to deliver intracellularly its payload, in a way, it's a little bit like an antibody drug conjugate, where you're able to essentially get in there, deliver your missile to the nucleus, and fortunately, innocent bystanders are relatively spared. It's not without toxicity. That would be a big mistake, but its toxicity is much more manageable. And what I'm very struck by with melflufen use in this highly refractory population is the low rates of infection that we see. I mean, that's quite striking. The infection rates are low.